KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Magia Street.
Berkeley.
Hercules, California.
Bible Park City College.
South San Francisco.
Downtown.
OTL.
Pittsburgh. P-World.
Oakland. Corona Heights, San Francisco.
Coming up, comedian W. Kamau Bell explains why sometimes he's felt not black enough.
There'd be assumptions about my level of hip-hop knowledge or the new album, and I would just have to either, you know, fake it, you know, or because I didn't want to be like, I don't really, you know, you always feel like, you know, until Carlton from The Fresh Prince, there was no way to sort of categorize that kind of blackness.
And a grandmother's ghost gives a chilling prophecy.
You're going to go to Alcatraz, and you're going to go do twice as much time as Al Capone.
Voices from the beyond in a story from Solano State Prison. Stay tuned, Cross Currents is coming up. First up today, we have an excerpt from the Stoop podcast, stories from across the Black diaspora, hosted by me and Leela Day. In this episode, we sit down with Oakland comedian and host of CNN's United Shades of America, W. Kamau Bell. We talked about being the awkward Black man and how he didn't always feel like he fit in with Black people. From the episode Black Enough, here's an excerpt from The Stoop. Kamau has been described as a blurred.
Blurred. Black nerd.
Black nerd.
When I was a kid, I just thought I was not cool.
And for Kamau, that blurredness started with the music he listened to.
I'm basically the same age as hip-hop, so I was, like, I remember hearing, like, the first hip-hop songs on the radio, like Rapper's Delight and Yes, I Can Do All the Words. But I didn't connect to it in a way that it was like, this is the best thing that ever happened to music. I didn't connect that deeply to it. So it was around me, but I knew I was supposed to connect to it. And I was often find myself in conversations with, you know, Black people. There'd be assumptions about my level of hip hop knowledge or the new album. And I would just have to either, you know, fake it, you know, or because I didn't want to be like, I don't really, you know, you always feel like, you know, until Carlton from The Fresh Prince, there was no way to sort of categorize that kind of blackness. But it was just like you end up, that's like the thing, like, I don't really listen to the hip-hop music, you know, so. So I was a kid who grew up into comic books and, you know, and reading a lot and, you know, and all these other, or, you know, sort of into things that, and also I think there's a part of it that, like, as a person whose references are like not the traditional Black references, so, you know, I'm going to reference Cornel West and Jimi Hendrix and John Coltrane, you know, like that somehow that means you're outside of mainstream culture, so therefore you're white people sort of claim this nerd status, and then this term blurred got created. And I was like, great.
And he says he really doesn't mind being called a blurred.
I'm glad to finally have a label, you know.
So you like it?
I mean, I think it's, I don't walk around calling myself a blurred, but I'm fine when people do it because I feel like it gives them some, people need a context for things. I don't hate it. I think it's funny. I'm glad that there is a label that is not pejorative for Black people who are not into the things that Black people are supposed to be into.
Okay, here we go again. Supposed to, right? Yeah. What's that about? And who says what the litmus test is for Blackness or Black culture?
I know. And for Kamau, he was like, and what is mainstream Black culture anyway?
I found out later that what I thought was Black culture was just a type of Black culture. But America does a really good job of sort of boxing things up. And I think that even Black people were sold on what Black culture was. So at the time, I thought hip hop was the kind of music that all Black people listened to. And maybe older Black people listened to the blues. You know, we went to church, we listened to gospel. And, you know, jazz is somewhere out there.
I mean, yeah, those are definitely some genres you think about when you think about Black music.
There you go again.
What?
Making that box for what Black people should be listening to, what, you know?
Right. I mean, I hear that. I mean, like me, I grew up listening to some hip-hop and R&B, but also I loved me some Hall & Oates, some Gloria Estefan, you know?
Yeah.
Country music was played a lot in our house because my mom loved Kenny Rogers.
Oh, you are such a country Sudanese.
We're country Sudanese. She said it reminded her of Sudanese music, so, like, lots of country music.
And so, okay. But
like, am I less Black because of that? Are we less Black because of that?
You look very Black to me. But let's go back to Kamau. So in high school, there was this revelation for him, right? And it blew his blurdy little mind. Now he was really into rock music.
So my two good friends listened to music, and at one time, one of them was talking about Jimi Hendrix, and I was like, Jimi Hendrix? And he's the greatest guitar player of all time. And I don't know how it came up, but one of them must have said something about him being black, and I'm like, Jimi Hendrix was black? How could the greatest rock and roll guitar player of all time be a black guy? Because I didn't connect that to blackness, you know, which is ridiculous when you think about it, because, I mean, we're talking about the 80s, like, you know, he died in the early 70s, so it's not, we're not talking about 100 years before, but in that time frame, Jimi Hendrix had been disconnected from his blackness enough that a black person could not know that he was black.
So then what was school like for little Kamau? Did he have any black friends?
Well, he moved around a lot with his family, and he ended up at a private school where he happened to test into these classes that were mostly white, with white kids. They're called Track 1 classes.
Track 1, those are like the high achievers, right?
Yeah, like the quote-unquote gifted class or whatever. Those were his friends. But then the black kids from the other classes did not like that.
I was standing with a group of my white friends, and a bunch of black kids sort of came at me and sort of pinned me up against the locker and sort of shook me down. And I was like, what's happening? And, you know, grabbed me and shook me around and sort of like, and then sort of dropped me and laughed and walked away. And one of these other black kids who was in one of the Track 1 classes was like, they did that because you don't hang out with the black kids. And I was like, I'm just hanging out with who's in my class. I hadn't put that level of thought on it. I was just, the kids I see in all my classes, I hang out with because I see them all the time. And that I wasn't breaking into, like, I'm only going to hang out with the white kids. I really didn't see it that way. Now I see how naive I was to not see it that way, even though I was a freshman in high school.
So Kamau grows up, and then he goes into comedy and finds, yet again, he feels like he doesn't belong.
I also started around the time that Def Comedy Jam started. There was a style of comedy that became really prevalent that was really infused by, like, Def Jam is a hip-hop label, so it was infused by hip-hop. And again, I wasn't listening to hip-hop. So even how I talk on stage, and because of where I've gone to school and my cultural references, again, are not those references. So anytime I would go to those clubs when I started, like black comedy clubs, I would feel like an outsider. And I would be like, there's no way that I could perform here. I'm not talking the way these people would want their comedians to talk.
Comedians like Sinbad or Jamie Foxx, Martin Lawrence.
What's up? Make some noise.
And yes. Luckily, I learned early on, and when I started really digging into comedy and becoming a student of comedy, that, like, not all black comedians are like that. But then the choice becomes for a lot of black comedians, and you play the white rooms. And then a lot of times in the white rooms, those black comedians get relegated to sort of a, what I would call like a, I'm not like the others. My last special was called Private School Negro, sort of making fun of that idea. Like, a lot of those black comedians would be on stage like, when black people get loud, I don't know what to do. I went to private school. You know, like, I'm not quoting anybody's joke, but it's just the idea that, like, your character in front of a white audience becomes, I don't understand black people either. You know what I mean? And I was like, I can't do that. I can't.
So, Hannah, he wasn't really fitting in with the black comedy scene on one hand. Mm-hmm. But then this idea of performing for the white crowd and having to play this role that wasn't really him, that was exhausting for him.
Yeah. And on top of all that, there was another thing. This thing that Chris Rock once told him.
When I got my first show, Totally Biased, Chris Rock was like, you're basically one of the spokespersons for black people right now because you're a black man on TV. So, like, whether you want to be or not, you are now one of the people they will come to when something black happens. The media will come to. You're also a person that black people are going to watch closely and go, is he, because at that point, he's like, you're not famous. I don't know who you are. So, is he okay? Is he on our side? And so he's like, and I was like, but I don't want to do that. And he was like, you don't really have a choice.
But does that feel like a burden?
Yeah, it is a burden. And it's a burden that is just, that is baked into the cake of this life in America.
He's right, though. I mean, we feel this as black journalists and podcasters, that there's always this thought about, will black people come after us after this episode?
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this. Will this make someone mad? Will I get the blacklash?
And Kamau goes really deep with, like, the topics he discusses, especially with his show, United Shades of America. And in fact, he gets the blacklash a lot from this one episode where he goes to the Ku Klux Klan and he talks to a Klansman who has his voice disguised.
I'm proud of my race. I'm proud to be white. You proud to be a black man?
I am proud to be a black man.
Okay, that's good. You're a black man. You married a black woman?
I'm married to a white woman.
You know what the Bible says about racial marriage? An abomination of sin.
On the list of sins, where is interracial marriage? There's like murder. And is interracial marriage equal to that, or is it?
It'll be above because it's an abomination.
So it's worse than murder?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Every time the episode of United Shades re-airs where I talk to the Klan, there's a certain percentage of black people who will get on Twitter and be like, how could you do that? How could you put the Klan on TV? Also, how come you just stood there and listened to them talk and didn't fight with them or argue with them or say anything or hit them with a chair, and how you were basically letting down the race by doing that episode? So, and that happens whenever it just re-aired a couple weeks ago when the new season started. And I was like, as soon as I saw it, like the first couple seconds, I was like, ah, damn. Like, I was like, all right, let me go on Twitter and just sort of like put out these fires, you know.
And Kamau says the blacklash doesn't stop with that. But he's learned how to deal with it now in a way that doesn't distract him anymore. Like, I'm grown and I own it.
See, I'm so own the things that I am that I also, the things that I know that there might be black people who are upset about. Like, you're not going to discover that I'm married to a white woman. It's very clear, and it's in, and I talk about it enough that it's not going to be something that you feel like I held from you. You're not going to discover that I went to a private school, and even though I'm claiming to be down with Black Lives Matter, my special's name, private school Negro. So the things that I maybe would have been afraid of when I was younger, now I've learned to embrace them. But yeah, like, there's times when people still will be, you know, I'll run across some segment of black people who are like, how is he married to a white woman? But it's just like, if the things you're coming at me for are things that I feel good about and I'm proud of and are working well for my life, then it doesn't hold as much ammunition. I feel like a lot of this is a grown adult speaking. This is not the way I would have talked about this 10 or 15 years ago.
And we can both relate to this, Hannah,
mm-hmm.
right? Because as time goes on, we just start growing up and growing out of these anxieties a little bit.
Yeah.
We start to care less, but it still burns.
It still hurts.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, that age for me is called your 40s. But anyway, and for Kamau, what also helped was he found himself some other blurs on his network.
This is CNN Tonight. I'm Don Lemon. Are there things in your past that you would like to undo or that you regret?
100%. But you can atone for those things. You can make up for those. You can try. You can at least try.
You can find redemption.
You can find redemption.
You can find redemption.
There could be a project that finds redemption for you.
There could be
a redemption type project.
Yes.
Hosted by Van Jones this Sunday at 9 p.m. on
okay.
CNN.
Thank you, sir.
So that's Kamau with Van Jones and Don Lemon from CNN.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just three brothers hanging out on Don Lemon's show.
Yeah, that night was pretty magical. I remember seeing that on TV and just running to Twitter because, you know, I knew it was going to be good. And sure enough, Black Twitter was on fire. There was this one lady that was saying, I was flipping through channels and stumbled across Black CNN.
Don growing up black and gay in the South. Van is, I didn't know him then, but is a militant out of Oakland. And me as this black kid who was just staying up to watch Seinfeld on The Tonight Show with his Bruce Lee posters on the wall. It was clear we were all sort of like, we were allowed to be our full selves, which a lot of times when I grew up, there was, I don't believe this is the case anymore, but there's real anti-intellectualism surrounded by, like, if you got good grades, you were not cool. And so for me, the idea that we could all be up there and say all the smart things we wanted to say and still Black Twitter was like, yay, not like, who are these black cornballs up here? You know, it's just like it felt good to just sort of, I could relax and I get to be myself because all of us are representing blackness on some level, but all of us are doing it in different ways. But I don't feel as much pressure to uphold the whole thing. I could relax and just be the funny guy.
That's comedian and TV host W. Kamau Bell, and that was an excerpt of The Stoop podcast hosted by me and Leela Day. We've got the whole episode called Black Enough at our website, kalw.org, and subscribe to The Stoop on your favorite podcast player. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Now a story from Uncuffed, our series recorded and edited by incarcerated men at Solano State Prison in Vacaville.
This is Uncuffed.
Stories from Solano State Prison.
Today's story is a spooky one. It comes from Uncuffed producer Brian Mazza.
Mart Wolf Mayo grew up in the U.S. by way of Estonia, the country where the grandmother he never knew passed away when he was 8 years old. Soon thereafter, psychic impressions began to predict his impending confinement in one of history's most notorious prisons, The Rock.
What I want to do is I'll tell you a story. But before I start, I want to clarify and let everyone know that I'm basically a scientist and a mathematician and an agnostic.
Okay.
Okay? There are certain things that science can't deal with. It can't tell you if God exists. It can't tell you what the meaning of life is. And it can't tell you what consciousness is. Those are outside the domain of science. Now, I was about 8 years old. Recently moved into this house in California, and my mom was crying. And I asked her, what's wrong? She said she'd just gotten a letter from Estonia saying her mother had died. And so for some reason, I went outside and I started crying, I mean, really hard. And all of a sudden, while I was crying, I felt a presence. And I started getting these feelings and thoughts putting into my head saying, you don't have to cry, everything's all right. I'm all right, everyone is all right. There's no need to cry. The communication was like telepathic and with feelings, emotions. I felt better. I never met my grandmother. Years later, my mom told me that she was psychic and could predict, like when the Russians were shelling each other, whether the Russians and Germans were shelling each other, she would just get the kids out of the house and get them out of there. And as soon as they got out of the house, a shell blew the house to pieces. Time goes by, I'm watching The Untouchables, the TV show The Untouchables. Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, they're taking Al Capone to Alcatraz in the TV show. And then I feel that presence again. And it tells me, you're going to go to Alcatraz and you're going to go do twice as much time as Al Capone. And I'm thinking, well, why would I'm a little kid. Why would I go to Alcatraz? I mean, I ain't done nothing wrong. Then about 1960, I go to Sun Valley Junior High and they require you to buy book covers for your books. And one of the book covers they sold had a picture of Alcatraz on it. And I would sit there and look at this in class. For some reason, I was fascinated with it and didn't know why. So why would I trip on this stuff, you know? About 1961, Robert Kennedy closed Alcatraz, but the feeling never went away. About 1965, I was 17. We're going through Laurel Canyon. We're going to this place called Beetolitos in Hollywood. They got a band there. People get high, and we're smoking weed. And the guy driving the car is an idiot. He's a friend of mine, but he's going to get us killed. I start to panic. Well, that same presence comes. It calms me down and says, nothing's going to happen to you. You're not going to get killed. Nothing's going to happen. You're going to go to Alcatraz and do twice as much time as Al Capone. Well, Alcatraz is closed. I'm thinking, well, this is ridiculous. But it calmed me down. Mm-hmm. And then also, another time it said, no matter what happens, you'll be okay. No matter how bad it gets, you'll be all right. I start going to jail, getting loaded, and shooting heroin. Anyway, I forgot all about the Alcatraz trip. Years later, 1990, they opened up. I go to Pelican Bay. We're one of the first ones in there. I mean, I was the first one to live in that cell they put me in, right? And I celled up with my best friend, and he got me to learn Spanish.
Tell me a little bit about the book that you learned Spanish out of. What was it called?
It was called the Cortina Method, Conversational Spanish in 20 Lessons.
And that's where you learned?
That's the word. Well, that in a little cheap Spanish-English dictionary. I ran into the word Alcatraz. Well, other than a prison, I didn't know what it meant. So I said, well, and then I said, the Alcatraz trip.
Alcatraz is a Spanish word?
It's a Spanish word. It's probably of Arabic origin. A lot of Spanish words, about 25% of Spanish words have Arabic origin because of the Moors. And most of them start with A-L,
like Alhambra, algebra, those are all Arabic words. Well, anyway, so I'm thinking, well, what is Alcatraz? This is the first time I thought about the old Alcatraz trip when I was a kid. I said, what a stupid thought that was. I mean, it was, you know, just a childish thought, not true. So I go to look up to see what Alcatraz means. So I get my Spanish English dictionary, I open it up and I find it. It means pelican. And then I realized, I'm in Pelican Bay Shoe. Okay, months later on the media, they would, when Pelican Bay was in full operation and it got on the media, they would start calling it the new Alcatraz. Mm-hmm. And it turns out Al Capone did 11 years and like 4 or 5 months in Alcatraz. I ended up doing 22 years and like 9 or 10 months in Pelican Bay Shoe. Twice as much time as Al Capone. I have no scientific explanation for this story. All I can tell you is it happened.
That was Mart Mayle speaking with Brian Mazza. Brian is a producer in KALW's radio program at Solano State Prison, which is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. All content is approved by an information officer, and the producers fact-check content to the best of their ability. We do have one correction to make in that story. Al Capone got a sentence of 11 years, but he only did about 6 on Alcatraz. You can listen to more stories from Uncuffed at our website, kalw.org/uncuffed. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. Oakland is the 3rd city in the country to ban facial recognition software.
Privacy experts are worried it could be used to monitor protesters and to arrest people for petty crimes like jaywalking.
Technology and policing tomorrow at 5. This music is by Day Labor from Pittsburgh. They're performing at the Octopus Literary Salon in Oakland Wednesday night. You got what they want, it's brains now. You got what they want and they won't let you go. You got your back against the wall, they're so slow. 3 shots and you call 45. 3 shots and you got no time to reload. Should have saved one more to take your own life. Go! Today's Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Audrey Dilling, Manola Morales, True Gwynn, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Jessica Plachek, Andrew Stelzer, Corey Suzuki, Jameson Weiss, and Eli Wortschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins and Tariq Foda. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.